Okay, so to get started tonight, so what we're going to pick up and jump right in where we left off Sunday morning is covering these two videos I was wanting to show. And it actually worked out kind of good because we probably wouldn't have had enough time to actually get through them Sunday morning. So if you may remember, so we're leaving off, got to the end of the period with the judges, and left off talking about, or was going to talk about the Jezreel Valley and show you some video of the Jezreel Valley, some of the routes that go through the entry and exit points for the Jezreel Valley. And mainly thinking about Deborah and Gideon in this. But there's some other events mixed in here with some of the stuff they'll talk about in this video, but mainly, again, Deborah and Gideon was what I was looking for here. But you think about it before this, there's been some critical stuff already with the Jezreel Valley. We have this, and United Kingdom, Divided Kingdom, and on in the New Testament, Jezreel Valley is a super critical point where essentially, if you're going to come through the land at all, going north to south, you're going to come through this area, unless... I mean, individuals could take a route that would have went right along the edge of the Carmel Ridge there. But, you know, if you've got a caravan or army or anything like that, you're not doing that. You're going to hit one of these routes that's coming through the Jezreel Valley. So that's where we're going to start.
The northeast gate exits the Jezreel Valley between the hill of Moreh and Mount Tabor. Therefore, we call this gate the Tabor Pass.
Right now we're at a ridge near Nazareth, and to my right you can see Mount Tabor and also the Valley of Jezreel, where Barak and Deborah fought a battle against Jabin and Sisera of Hazor, and where the Lord gave them great victory. Also behind me is the Mount of Moreh, where a city known as Nain sits on the ridge, and that is where the Lord Jesus Christ raised a poor widow from the dead.
The Tabor Pass is part of the great international route that connects with nations further north. Note the Wadi Arbel, where the route drops down to the plain of Gennesaret along the Sea of Galilee. This Arbel region, the international route comes along the northwestern side of the Sea of Galilee, then north. On map 1-3, note the continuation of the international route. From the Jezreel Valley to the Sea of Galilee, the route climbs north to the city of Hazor in the Hula Valley. The route continues north in the Hula Valley to the region around Dan, where it branches to Lebanon or Damascus of Syria and beyond to Mesopotamia. The east gate of the Jezreel Valley is the Harod Valley route, connecting the cities of Jezreel and Beth. The Jezreel Valley is shaped like an arrowhead. The Harod Valley is the arrow, running along the north side of Mount Gilboa. On map 1-3, note how the gateway to the east, the Harod Valley, intersects with the important route in the Jordan Rift Valley at the city of Bethshan. From here there is access up into Gilead. One route intersects with the Transjordan International Highway, or the way to Bashan, at the city of remote Gilead. Here is a beautiful aerial photograph from the Pictorial Library of Bible Lands collection. We're looking at Mount Gilboa and the Harod Valley from west to east. Here is the modern kibbutz and ancient Tel Jezreel. Mount Gilboa, the Harod Valley, the modern route in the Harod Valley, maneuvering past irrigation and fish ponds to Beth Shan. Here's a portion of the Rift Valley, and off to the east, the hills of Gilead. There are many biblical events that show the Harod Valley was an important route. As marked on map 4-6, the Lord chose 300 men in the days of Gideon at the Harod Spring, near the city of Jezreel at the base of Mount Gilboa. The Midianites were across the Harod Valley at the foot of the hill of Moreh. When Gideon blew the trumpet, the Midianites panicked and fled down the Harod Valley, crossed the Jordan River, and tried to escape further east through Gilead.
Okay, and so this video is going to pick up and explain, I think, the last one or two routes in and out, and then it's going to do a summary of what they just covered.
And finally, the southern gate of the Jezreel Valley, the Bible calls the Ascent of Gur. The continuation is 1-3. It ascends into the hills of Samaria at Ibleam, and just before Dothan splits. one branch toward the city of Samaria and the other toward Tirzah. The routes rejoin at Shechem, where it continues south on the watershed route, the road of the patriarchs. So these are the gates in and out of the Jezreel Valley. The Mount Carmel passes to the coastal plain in Egypt, the Kishon pass to the plain of Asher and the Mediterranean Sea, the Shechem pass beyond the Nazareth Ridge, the Tabor pass, a continuation of the great international route to the northeast, the Harod Valley route with connections to the Jordan Rift Valley and Gilead, and the ascent of Gur into Samaria.
Okay, so, you know, hard not to stop that at multiple points and just talk about things like one, for example. So Mount Gilboa, so you hear that and you think about it, and it's not like Mount Tabor where it's just a single mountain. Mount Gilboa is actually, it's extended somewhat. But also the arrowhead shape of the valley, you know, so that's something I never really got until, you know, looking into it deeper like this, being there and seeing it, that it's not just a straight shot valley, it's that that arrowhead kind of formation. Anyway, just wanted to show that to finish from Sunday morning before we ended the period of the judges. Of course, this being a couple of the early judges that we were looking at here. So, okay, you can swap to tonight's presentation. And so tonight, moving into the United Kingdom. So, and what we are, obviously you just added the conquest, invasion and conquest period in the Judges, and just continuing on with the United Kingdom. So, you know, everything that we've done last class, everything we'll be doing this class, so, you know, we're all in the central core part of Israel and a little bit on the Transjordan side as well. But, you know, so all taking place, you know, in this map area. And, of course, here, nothing outside in the other regions, at least not that we're directly dealing with. So if we look at our timeline slides, so we are getting down to now, but start of the United Kingdom, 1000 BC-ish time frame. And so, you know, we're adding that one tonight. And for this period, still, you know, similar events there as we get down to 1000 BC, but we're also now moving into that 1000 to 721 fall of Samaria time frame. So, you know, which would begin the divided kingdom. And so with world events here, Assyria is now becoming more prominent, obviously, because in 721, they take Samaria. If we look at wider Mediterranean, Rome is coming on the radar very early, but it's going to be founded. You have other areas, Rome and Damascus with Hazael as king, and then other king names that you'll recognize as well as we get further on in time from Mesopotamian Persia. Tiglath-Pileser III, Shalmaneser IV, and then Sargon II. So that'll be, you know, world events that are coming during this time frame as well. And just showing the different image there. So if we think about United Kingdom, so, you know, that being the core part that Israel lived in, but then the area up to where David conquered, and then, you know, Solomon's control, not necessarily from a conquering perspective, but from relationships and alliances and things like that that he had, which would extend even further, and just showing the contrast there with the divided kingdom that will happen. So with Israel being that core area, and then Judah in the south. So concepts and messages that you know you would cover in this period. So so these narratives are mainly about the main three rulers during this time period. Saul, David, and Solomon. And so, you know, you think about each one of these. So you think about Saul. And, you know, so Saul did listen to God, mostly when it suited him and when it was in his best interest. You think about David being a man after God's own heart, so good in so many ways, but wasn't perfect. And then Solomon, and what I didn't finish typing out on this line here was thinking, but didn't finish typing, that, you know, he was given everything or took everything. But it cost him that with some of the excess, and thinking about, you know, the influence that some of the foreign wives, the many foreign wives that he had, that he took on. So that's some concepts to think about with the three rulers. Also with this slide, I've been saying the past few classes of, you know, locational details. So, you know, you think about where we start this period, 1 Samuel 9 and 10, with Saul's anointing. So there are some general location aspects given there, but there's also some very specific ones as well. And so we're still dealing with some things that may be a specific mention, but it will be something that we don't know about. But we are continuing to get more geographical detail with Saul's narratives, even more, Saul and David both, and their interactions, but then also separately, a lot more locations and locational details. But you know, with Solomon, you really don't get that because his narratives and the things about him and around him are centered mainly around Jerusalem. So when you think about that cycle three content for this period, pretty simple. It's only three in this one, just the three rulers, Saul, David, and Solomon, the three kings. And then, of course, we put our scriptural limits with that, 1 Samuel 10 and the 1 Kings 11, and also in Chronicles, 1 Chronicles 10 to 2 Chronicles 9. And just a bigger shot of the map, that core area that Israel had, where David expanded to, and then that larger area that Solomon would have had influence over. And it had this map last time as well, just kind of giving a nice color shot of that, of those extents. And then also the areas that were annexed east of the Jordan. Okay, so now as we get into where the next few things we're going to cover, so it's going to be, you know, Jerusalem area and just a little bit north of Jerusalem. And so this video is going to talk about the Central Benjamin area and what's called the Central Benjamin Plateau, and you'll see that as it comes through the video here. And this is mainly about accessing Jerusalem from the north.
Shalom. This video is commentary for the Satellite Bible Atlas, maps 1-8 and 1-9, approaches to Jerusalem and the Benjamin region. We will focus on a cross-section of territory that spreads over four regions. To the west of Jerusalem, the hill country where Jerusalem sits, 2,500 to 2,800 feet above sea level, then to the east, the rugged Judean wilderness sloping down to the Rift Valley and Jericho. Jerusalem's latitude is about the same as the top of the Dead Sea. So, to find Jerusalem quickly on any map, from the top of the Dead Sea, come directly west or left. Remember, however, that Jerusalem is over 4,000 feet higher in elevation than the Dead Sea. Note that the area north of Jerusalem was allotted to the tribe of Benjamin. Jerusalem itself sits within the borders of Benjamin. We will see that the most important routes to Jerusalem, even from the east or west, approach Jerusalem from the north, that is, through the territory of Benjamin. On map 1-9, take a closer look at the important area just north of Jerusalem. The area is called the Central Benjamin Plateau. It is relatively flat ground on the hill country watershed, with canyons cutting to its east and west. Only 3 to 7 miles north of Jerusalem, the Central Benjamin Plateau is outlined by the biblical cities of Gibeon on the west, Mizpah on the north, Geba on the east, and Gibeah, the capital of Saul, on the south. Ramah, the hometown of Samuel, is at the center of the plateau. The Central Benjamin Plateau is staging ground for main routes heading to Jerusalem. Control of Central Benjamin means access to Jerusalem. A historical example of this.
Okay, so that's a good setup for us to begin talking about the events of Saul. And so we're just going to step through some of the locations here. So I've got these numbered on the map. So Saul is made king, and as was just mentioned, they're the location of Ramah. They're close to Jerusalem, just a little bit north of it. And so that'd be 1 Samuel chapter 10. So Saul's victory at Jabesh-Gilead against Ammon. So with that, we're coming over on the east side of the Jordan and up just a little bit there at Ammon. Covenant renewed with Saul, back down closer to Jerusalem. The battle against the Philistines, Geba and Michmash in an area or close to an area called or where the pass is, and we'll talk about that in just a moment, what that is. And then Saul's battles against Moab, Ammon, Edom, others, and so we're on that east side again, but a little bit south there on the east side of the Dead Sea. Saul's battle and issues that he had with the Amalekites, so that's more south of Jerusalem. And then, of course, the end story with Saul is his death at Mount Gilboa, which is back up in the Jezreel Valley that we just looked at. So I have a couple of photos, and so one of these we've used a number of times in the class. So it's this shot, which is, so the way this view cone works is, so, you know, that's the point from where the picture was taken, looking north. And actually this cone should probably slid over just a little bit to the right. But for the most part, that's a central hill country area, and that's what that looks like. So Jerusalem right there, so we're just a little bit west of Jerusalem. The reason I didn't actually use a picture of Jerusalem is because it would just be nothing but buildings, you know, so it's you know, modern urban city there. Even if you're looking at the old city of Jerusalem, it's still modern everywhere around it. So, you know, you wouldn't get the look and feel like that if you're actually looking at Jerusalem city pictures. So this photo is from Shiloh, and it's looking north as well. And so it's looking up one of the main roads, modern roads through there, which also follows ancient route as well. Now, relief and hill-wise, you know, pretty much the same terrain, except it's just not as much vegetation, not as many trees there. But that's really probably more a factor of, as I mentioned in a previous class, border areas like Egypt, and then also when you go north to Syria, things that are in Israel proper, and even in the West Bank, it's different. You know, you don't have the vegetational look and feel a little bit different just because of different land management practices. So essentially, if this had trees, it would look very similar to this. A little bit different, but very, very similar. Okay, so this video is going to show some routes coming in from Jericho up to the Central Benjamin Plateau, and the pass I mentioned is going to be described in here as well.
And only 15 miles away, Jerusalem is 3,500 feet higher in elevation than Jericho. The Good Samaritan would have descended along the Adamim route when he assisted a man that had fallen among thieves. Jesus traveled on this ridge when he came to Jerusalem to die. The next route that ascends into the hill country from Jericho is called the Ephraim Ridge Route. This route follows a ridge between the drainage of the Wadi Nuema and the Wadi Uja. A route ascending directly west from Jericho is called the Zeboim route. Note that near the town of Michmash, this route forks. One fork angles north toward Ai and joins the Road of the Patriarchs near Beth Aven and Bethel. Joshua undoubtedly utilized this route when he conquered and burned Ai. Another fork turns toward the town of Michmash and the place the Bible calls the Pass. The pass is a place where one can cross over from one side to the other of the Wadi Suanit. The town of Michmash guards the north side of the pass. Geba guards the south side. From Geba, one has access to Central Benjamin.
We are down in the Suanit Valley, where we were just overlooking between Michmash and Geba. And this is a place where Jonathan crossed with his armor bearer from Geba down here between these two cliffs, which he had to climb using his hands, up to the Philistine garrison at Michmash. And the cliffs have been named in the Bible in 1 Samuel 14:4, where it says, on each side of the pass that Jonathan intended to cross to reach the Philistine outpost was a cliff, one called Bozez and the other Sineh. One cliff stood to the north toward Michmash and the other to the south toward Geba.
Map 7-7 illustrates a historical event at the Pass of Michmash in the days of King Hezekiah and the prophet Isaiah. A garrison of Assyrian soldiers threatened Jerusalem from the north. Isaiah tells us the enemy came from the north and deposited supplies on the north side of the pass at Michmash. Then Isaiah says, "They've crossed over the pass. He's lodging at Geba. Ramah is terrified. Gibeon of Saul has fled." The Assyrians came to Nob and shook their fist threateningly at Jerusalem. But that was enough. The Lord cut the Assyrians down like a tree.
This is beautiful.
So awesome. Okay, so got into Hezekiah a little bit there, but just didn't want to try stopping and starting the video, but I wanted you to see that video shot and then the pan out from the past there. So there are not many places that are not associated with a city or a specific archaeological site where, unless there's some kind of inscription that's found that's labeling the city, not like an actual sign for the city, but say like texts that talk about things that have been traded or things that have been in storehouses that have been exchanged. So when you have some of those texts, sometimes like that, that are found in a good archaeological context, it can tell you the name of the place and also the time period from which it's from. So, you know, you don't have something like that with the pass that we just looked at, but you do have two places on each side of it that are known. You also have everything we've just seen in these videos and even from the earlier Jezreel videos where these routes, certain routes are funneled where they are just because of the way the landscape is. So this is one of those where, you know, it may not be like a city point, it is close to cities, but it's an area where there's really only a few ways that traffic could have funneled through there, and that's going to be it. So the way it's described in the scripture with those two rock faces like that, I mean, in that area around there, that would most likely be that spot. So that's why I find that interesting. Okay, but now we're into David and Saul. So Saul and David, Saul and Amalek, and then so we're moving into like 1 Samuel 15, 16, 17, David anointing king at Bethlehem, David defeating Goliath, and then David fleeing from Saul because of you know, some of those events that happened there with David defeating Goliath and some of the after effects of that. But what I want to get to with this is just, you know, show a few points about timeline things with David and Saul, but then David and Saul's chase. And so I want to do something like what we did Sunday, where we're going to read, if you want to be turning over to 1 Samuel chapter 23. So we're going to be reading from 1 Samuel chapter 23. We're going to start in verse 13. And so what I want to do here is read, and much like Sunday, so there's a core message that's going to be coming through the scripture of what we're reading here about Saul and David. The leaders that they are, the interactions they had, and just their hearts, and everything that you can pull out of what we're about to read. But listen for the locations, just a few mentions as we go through this. But we're going to, you know, and just like with Jericho, you know, so some of this location-wise you're going to be reading, it's going to be in passing, but it's very critical for understanding how some of this works and how it plays out on the ground. And you'll see this as we talk about it and show some more photos and video as well. But 1 Samuel 23, starting in verse 13, and we're going to read through chapter 24. Then David and his men, and we're just going to pick right up in the middle of this context. It's just one of the chase scenes with Saul and David. Then David and his men, who were about 600, arose and departed from Keilah, and they went wherever they could go. When Saul was told that David had escaped from Keilah, he gave up the expedition, and David remained in the strongholds in the wilderness, in the hill country of the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day, but God did not give him into his hand. David saw Saul, that Saul, had come out to seek his life. David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh. And Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David at Horesh and strengthened his hand in God. And he said to him, "Do not fear, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Saul, my father, knows this. And the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. David remained at Horesh, and Jonathan went home. Then the Ziphites went up to Saul at Gibeah, saying, "Is not David hiding among us in the strongholds at Horesh, and on the hill of Hakilah, which is south of Jeshimon? Now come down, O king, according to all your heart's desire to come down, and our part shall be to surrender him into the king's hand." And Saul said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, for you have compassion on me. Go, make yet more sure. Know and see the place where his foot is, and who has seen him there. For it is told me that he's very cunning. And therefore, take note of all the lurking places where he hides, and come back to me with sure information. Then I will go with you after he is in the land, and I will search him out among all the thousands of Judah." And they arose and went to Ziph ahead of Saul. Now David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon in the Arabah, in the south of Jeshimon. And Saul and his men went to seek him, and David was told, so he went down to the rock and lived in the wilderness of Maon. And when Saul heard of that, he pursued after David in the wilderness of Maon. Saul went on one side of the mountain, and David and his men on the other side of the mountain. And David was hurrying to get away from Saul. As Saul and his men were closing in on David and his men to capture them, a messenger came to Saul saying, "Hurry and come, for the Philistines have made a raid against the land." So Saul returned from pursuing David and went against the Philistines. Therefore that place was called the Rock of Escape. And David went up from there and lived in the strongholds of En-Gedi. Chapter 24. When Saul returned from following the Philistines, he was told, "Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi." Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men of Israel and went to seek David and his men from the in front of the wild goats' rocks. And he came to the sheepfolds by the way, where there was a cave, and Saul went in to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the innermost parts of the cave. And the men of David said to him, "Here is the day of which the Lord said to you, 'Behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it shall seem good to you.'" Then David arose and stealthily cut off a corner of Saul's robe. And afterwards David's heart struck him, because he had cut off the corner of Saul's robe. And he said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing that he is the Lord's anointed." So David persuaded his men with these words and did not permit them to attack Saul. And Saul rose up and left the cave and went on his way. Afterward, David also arose and went out of the cave and called for Saul, "My lord the king." And when Saul looked behind him, David bowed with his face to the earth and paid homage. And David said to Saul, "Why do you listen to the words of men who say, 'Behold, David seeks you harm'? Behold, this day your eyes have seen how the Lord gave you into my hand in the cave. And some told me to kill you, but I spared you. And I said, 'I will not put my hand against the Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. See, my father, see the corner of your robe in my hand. For by the fact that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you, you may know and see that there is no wrong or treason in my hands. I have not sinned against you, though you hunt my life to take it. May the Lord judge between me and you, and may the Lord avenge me against you. But my hand shall not be against you, as the proverb of the ancient says, 'Out of the wicked comes wickedness.' But my hand shall not be against you, after whom the king of Israel has come out." As a question, after whom has the king of Israel come out? After whom do you pursue? After a dead dog? After a flea? May the Lord therefore judge and give the sentence between me and you, and see to it and plead my case and deliver me from your hand." As soon as David had finished speaking these words to Saul, Saul said, Is this your voice, my son David?" And Saul lifted up his voice and wept and said to David, "You are more righteous than I, for you have repaid me good whereas I have repaid you evil. And you have declared this day how you have dealt well with me, and that you did not kill me when the Lord put me into your hands. For if a man finds his enemy, will he let him go away safe? So may the Lord reward you with the good for what you have done to me this day. And now behold, I know that you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand. Swear to me therefore by the Lord that you will not cut off my offspring after me, and that you will not destroy my name out of my father's house." And David swore this to Saul, and Saul went home, but David and his men went up to the stronghold. Okay, so with that reading, I'm going to look at the area of En-Gedi. And so, you know, what we just read through and where we started off there in chapter 23, so we're talking about some of these places you can see on this inset. So, you know, so we're right down there, midpoint at least of that section of the Dead Sea, you know, all the way over to the edge, certainly at the edge with En-Gedi. But we're inland with a little bit where we started talking about with Keilah and Maon and other places like that. And so those locations I'm not as familiar with, but certainly like Hebron and the Judean wilderness area, you know, so very well-known areas En-Gedi is as well. So that's the first inset map. This is the second. So just zooming in a little bit on the Dead Sea here of where we're at, but then also zooming in more on that En-Gedi area right there. And so also want you to see these different wadis. So En-Gedi is one as well. And of course, there's a spring there. So it's wet year-round. But these other ones are just when it's rainy season. But there's multiple wadis there, or canyon type crevices. Okay, and so what we're looking at here is if you're at En Gedi and you're looking up into the wadi, so that's a view that you're going to see. Now we're going to see a view in a moment where we turn around and look directly behind us. But that's one view in, and if we walk in a little bit closer and get closer to the waterfall that's in the back of the wadi, so this is the waterfall there. Now, this next shot is going to be from up on top of this ridge here. Okay, so that's the shot from the top of the ridge, but that's the cone there where your view is. So you're looking from En Gedi, so that's that reverse view where I said we're looking behind us now, looking out over the Dead Sea. So you're looking completely across the Dead Sea over to the Transjordan. This is a similar view, just a little bit further back on that ridge up top. And completely unintentional, but I happened to catch a picture of a bird like flying right next to the rock there. It's kind of neat. So, but that's two shots looking back out toward the Dead Sea. Now, so this next video is going to show, this is drone video footage of this wadi canyon area. And you'll just see how dramatic this actually is when you can get up and get an aerial shot of this. And so the way this is going to start off is that you're going to be looking at one of the sides of the canyon, one of the large mountainous rocks on one side, and it's going to pan down in and look down into the area where this waterfall is. You can turn that volume down just a little bit. Okay, so that's where the waterfall is there. Much better perspective. Because, those photos we were looking at were from down at that level. So I'm just going to let this play instead of trying to start and stop it. There's one place that that I may get Jeremy to stop it for me. But other good shots of coming into the waterfall. This is actually a national park today. You can go there, and there's no people here now while they're shooting this video, but you can go in and actually swim in the pools that the spring feeds. Okay, so this is where we're coming back up. It's kind of neat. You can actually see the trails that you can walk on the side up there as well. And so right about in here, Jeremy, if you want to stop it at about 5:30, let go just a little bit more. About right there. What I'm trying to see in the scene cuts here in just a second, but So, you know, what you're coming up to and looking out over is the is that Judean wilderness. So that's not as not as rugged as wilderness of Zin that we've looked at before. But on the maps we were looking at just a moment ago, where we're looking at all that was happening a little bit more west of the Dead Sea area, like Keilah and, you know, wilderness of Ziph and stuff like that. You know, it's in that Judean wilderness area up there. So, so with that. So looking at this, think about, you know, think about the scripture that we read. Think about, so again, the core of that, Saul and David's interactions, you know, who they were, getting us through the narrative and getting us on to the next point in the narrative. But, you know, think about these things from a geographical and a landscape perspective. So back through some of those scriptures there in 1 Samuel 23:13. So David and his men, about 600 in number, left Keilah and kept moving from place to place. When Saul was told that David had escaped from Keilah, he did not go there. Now that's before we get over to this area, but we get a sense for how many men David was working with and would have been traveling with him. You know, maybe not necessarily all together at the same time, but that was his, people that were with him in his fighting force. But in chapter 23, verses 26 to 29, so Saul was going along one side of the mountain, and David and his men were on the other side, hurrying to get away from Saul. As Saul and his forces were closing in on David and his men to capture them, a messenger came to Saul saying, "Quickly, the Philistines are raiding the land." Then Saul broke off his pursuit of David and went to meet the Philistines. That is what they call this place, Selah Hamalekot. And David went up from there and lived in the strongholds of En-Gedi. So just the reason I'm reading that, and again, this may not have been this area, but when you see, you know, the mountains like this, and you can see other ones there in the background, if you're reading this and thinking, okay, well, is this in a place where, there could have been people on each side of a ridge or mountains and running away from each other and actually being able to hide and things like that, and this really sets that up where you have that. Also with what we were looking at just now, with this, with the Wadi of En-Gedi. You know, so you think about how dramatic that drop-off is, and you think about what it looks like here, and as it goes on down into where we looked at where the waterfall is, you know, could 300 or 600 men hide in there when 3,000 others are looking for them out across this landscape? Sure, no problem. You could easily fit that many people in there. So again, just reading that, to read the narrative that we read, take the story and what it's giving us there, but these geographical points with things that we can know, some of them general, but some of them a little more specific, to give us a sense for what this landscape was like, where they would have been. Okay, and don't have time to say what I was going to say about, if you can give me, you have to click back on the other screen to give me back the clicker. But just to wrap this up with David and the Philistines. So David at Ziklag, 1 Samuel 30, Saul's death as it occurs with these events now that we're in, and David being made king at Hebron. And of course, then we get into David and all the events with David. So as we cover that on this map, David moving the capital from Hebron to Jerusalem, the Philistines in the Valley of Ephraim, which is in the Jerusalem area. Jerusalem becomes the religious capital with the ark being brought there. And with David, you have him expanding into Moab and Edom, so coming over to the east side again. Also expanding into the Bashan and Aram region, so going north up over on the right side. Also Ammon as well, so there. And then Absalom's revolt, which happens in parts of that in the area of Ephraim. And then Sheba of Benjamin revolting, which takes place and goes, they track north there. So that's with David. And then with Solomon, so, you know, you think about what Solomon was most known for, asking for wisdom, him being given wisdom, all the things that he amassed, building the temple, you know, things like that is what we think about with Solomon. With that, Solomon was a man of peace and not war, right? So so there's no war conflict details to, do a lot of geographical stuff with there. But with the treaties that he maintained and alliances, amassing the wealth we talked about through some of that and building the temple, you know, you do have some locational details that can be covered, but for the most part, it's Saul and David that give us all the locational stuff that we deal with here. And that's it. That gets us through the end of the United Kingdom.